You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 23rd of June. I'm Simon Brown coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we're going to chat with Derek Janser von Rensburg. City Lodge rights issues, Telkom suspends a dividend in favor of spectrum auctions, and more Glencore troubles. We're going to chat storage on the storage business during a pandemic, and Discovery Invest diversification is the only free lunch as they team up with Goldman Sachs and BlackRock. Some morning headlines. MoneyWeb GrowthPoint warns of up to a 20% decline in SA property values. They have a fairly solid update. The V&A waterfront is struggling, getting back some of that foot traffic, but still significantly down. Obviously, it is a huge tourist hub, and well, ain't no foreigners flying into Cape Town right now. Business Day, Edcon business rescue process approved. That finally wrapping up. Morning markets. US overnight was green. We got the S&P up 0.7. NASDAQ was up 1.1. Still seeing that disconnect happening there. NASDAQ sort of edging ahead of S&P. Asia mixed with Sydney flat. Tokyo up 0.9. Commodities slightly red across the board. Gold at 1765 after a good Monday. Back at the top of that range it's been in since pretty much early April. The Rand 1732 and top 40 opening call looking for about 0.75% green.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Chris Oosterhuizen. He's head sales marketing product at Storage. Chris, appreciate your time this morning. Results to year-end March out yesterday. Solid set of numbers. Dividend up 5%. That's a bit of a rarity in our market. It's even more of a rarity in the property space. Self-storage has typically been resilient. Even in a recession, you know, it helped people downscaling. They store possessions, etc. You're of the view that a pandemic is going to also be supportive of the self-storage business model.
Morning, Simon. So self-storage and transitions sort of go hand in hand, be it on the business front or the personal front. You think of any life-altering events that people would go through, self-storage tends to be a product thereof, be it kids moving in or out, upsizing or downsizing, immigrating, whatever it might be. Self-storage is a product of those life transitions. So it's been an interesting few months, as it has been for everyone, but we have seen good demand over the last 2 months in particular, especially over level three. And we should be looking forward to that over the next few months.
I suppose, and I hadn't thought of it, a lot of people working from home now that maybe had a spare bedroom, that spare bedroom had stuff in it, and they're like, oh dear, need to move it. I imagine, access in level five was probably tricky. Level four and three, are you more or less open for normal activity?
Yeah, so it's an interesting one because, I mean, I stay in the city in Cape Town. I've got a small apartment and my spare room, and I have a small garage, and that garage and my car was parked outside, and my spare room was full of stuff, and I can never have guests over, you know, and the reality is my self-storage unit 100 meters up the road, and my winter clothes are now there, and some of my summer clothes are there in winter, and it actually is an extension of my home, and even from the short-term net industry isn't going at the moment, but even in that industry, is the ability to unlock revenue, I guess, for an individual from their own apartment is also quite appealing. But under level three, we were accessible under level five to certain customers that were fulfilling requirements, and we've managed to keep access available to our tenants all the way through. At the moment, we're completely open. We've gone completely paperless, so we've launched an ease. Reservation program, so we have the ability to engage and meet people in without any face-to-face contact. And the nice thing is we're a very low-traffic type of business, so you don't have five people standing in a queue and you aren't all going into the lift at the same time, even though a facility, so our facilities have 1,000 plus units.
Yeah, that's a great point. I had storage way back in the day. I didn't visit it for 18 months. I just paid every month and took the money. You've reported, I mean, your occupancy levels sort of coming in just under 84%. That's split between slightly better in the US, in South Africa versus the UK. Is that something which can get higher? I mean, I look at traditional property, and of course, not a fair comparison, really, sort of office and the like. They're typically in the 90s. Can you squeeze another, I don't know, 5 or 10% over the years ahead into occupancy levels?
Yeah, so importantly, I mean, on a like-for-like basis, we did see some nice occupancy uptick in the UK in particular and in South Africa. I mean, it's important to remember, I think with COVID, we sort of forget that Brexit happened and we had severe economic uncertainty in South Africa, and it was a tough year for South Africa over the last 12. But we did see some good occupancy gains come through. But we unquestionably can see some more occupancy come through. I think it's important to remember that, you know, circa 35,000 tenants, and every month you've got a percentage of those that move out, be it 2,000 to 3,000 tenants, depending on the month. And you have to move people in again. So you're generating demand, people moving in, people moving out. So with that level of churn, you have the ability to eke out that occupancy by driving the demand on the top side.
Yeah, you do have a high level of churn, and I remember when you first listed, I looked at that churn, and to be honest, it spooked me. But you're on the other side, you've got that constant customer coming in, you've got that process, and a process which I went through. Eventually, I didn't use. I decided to get rid of my excess stuff I hadn't used in a long time. But a slick online process which constantly brings in that new stream as you're losing out people exiting on the other side. Did you see much change to that sort of numbers of new clients in, clients out, sort of post sort of lifting of lockdown, things getting a little easier under level 4 and 3?
Yeah, so if we look at April was obviously quite a challenging month because there was so much uncertainty, and I mean, we had a few chances here and there, we helped people out where we could, but the reality is that April was a very challenging month. We saw good levels of demand come back in May. And with what we've seen in June thus far spread out over the quarter, we've hit our quarterly targets, and we've seen a nice little uptick year on year. So from a demand perspective, that is looking very, very positive. So with the actual physical occupancy perspective, we had a good month last month and a good month this month again. Again, when you're smoothing it out, we sort of negate the effect of April.
Yeah, I was chatting with Keith McLachlan yesterday. He runs a small cap fund from Alpha Wealth, and he was saying best REIT on the JSE, and he's been saying that for a long time. And so far, he's been right about it. Chris Osterhazen, Head of Sales Marketing Product at Storage, appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
We've got Derek Janser from Rensburg. He's a portfolio manager at Anchor Capital. Derek, morning. Appreciate your time. Another rights issue yesterday, this time City Lodge. They're only raising some just over $1.2 billion, but, I mean, the stock down 16.6%. They're in a tough space. And a large part of this rights issue is actually essentially to bail out the BEE, and shareholders are taking a jaundiced view of the whole process.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Absolutely, very dilutionary. You know, it's just actually quite interesting. You know, we're obviously going through a period where I think there is going to be quite significant capital raises, rights issues, book builds, just as you start to rebolt the balance sheets, you know, in the listed space. I think what's quite interesting to me when you look at some of these rights issues and the City Lodge rights issue in particular is the quantum and the size of these rights issues.
Yeah.
You know, they're obviously trying to cater for, you know, putting them in a very strong fundamental position for as long as possible, but certainly hurting a lot of shareholders from a dilution perspective. If you're not able to follow your rights, it's a very, very difficult task to try and, you know, take up all of your rights that you get offered as a shareholder. Concerning around the BEE, you know, bailout basically, and I think City Lodge is in a very tough space at the moment. You know, I just don't see occupancy levels turning around very quickly, very sharply. I think it's going to be a very slow, gradual process, and that obviously that probably talks to the quantum of that rights issue.
Yeah, a market cap $1.1 billion after the sell-off, massively dilutory. Listeners should remember the conversation we had with Jean-Pierre on Monday about it, and perhaps you should actually just exit the position if you're not convinced around the either being able to follow your rights or perhaps just the whole process of will there be more. Telkom results yesterday, to me the big point was suspended dividend policy for 3 years over because they need the capital for spectrum auctions due later this year. Stock off just over 7%. My sense is that under normal conditions, under non-pandemic conditions, they probably could have done the dividend, raised some debt. But this is the new world we live in, and lenders are being very cautious with debt. We City Lodge rights issue, Telkom suspending dividend. It's rough out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's quite an interesting business. And I mean, if we go just to the bottom of the V that we went through in terms of this V-shaped sell-off, I think Telkom bottomed out around 14 odd rand a share. Mm-hmm. Obviously, recovered since then. And, you know, there's lots of, there's a few moving parts with Telkom. I am quite concerned about the cash flow generation with regards to a business like this. They have obviously raised some provisions due to COVID-19 and kind of penciled that into their sort of forward looking statements. More than that, there's also a bigger play here where there is an underlying net asset value. There's certainly a property component to the business. There's a big tower business that could certainly unlock a lot of value. So it's all about doing the right thing for shareholders ultimately at the end of the day in terms of how you unlock that shareholder value. Remember, you've got government as quite a big signature shareholder in this business. So certainly if you need to raise cash via a rights issue or a book build or whatever it may be quite difficult for government to follow. And obviously they've got a quite a significant say in terms of how you vote for this company. I just think that, you know, unlocking value through the sale of some of their property assets might be the big play here. And rather looking at almost at a net asset value type valuation. You know, I think it's well placed, but I'm not that excited about the sort of short to medium term organic growth of Telkom as we stand right now.
Yeah, that's a great point. And they do have a ton of properties out there. And that tower business, we've seen other companies exiting tower business, spinning it out. They come out with solid values there. Before I let you go, Glencore, more bad news on a Swiss criminal probe over the DRC dealings. As an investor, these sort of news pieces come across. Do you sort of get out entirely? Do you take a slightly more sort of jaundiced view on it? How do you play that sort of bad news that keeps on coming onto Glencore?
You know, one always needs to be reminded of the fact that where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen this game play out before in my time. Yes, Glencore is a massive business, big listed business, but you can certainly get exposure to the resource space by looking at some of the other big listed, whether it's in Anglos or a Billiton or a Rio Tinto, one of the big diversified miners from an offshore perspective. I'm concerned. I won't play in that space just given the noise that we're hearing around all the investigations taking place. And as I said, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. I just don't think it's worth the risk of actually being invested in Glencore per se when there's a lot of other options out there from a commodity mix as well in terms of iron ore exposed stuff. I'm certainly just not playing in the Glencore space.
Yeah, that's a wrap point. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Be careful, people out there. Derek Jensen from Rensburg, Portfolio Manager, Anchor Capital. Appreciate the time.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Kenny Rapson. He's CEO of Discovery Invest. They had an announcement yesterday about tying up with BlackRock and Goldman Sachs. But Kenny, before we get to that, I mean, one of the most used phrases out there is diversification is the only free lunch. It's credited to Warren Buffett, but actually it was Nobel Prize winner Harry Markowitz. What March showed us in the market collapses and the subsequent recovery is that diversification is a critical component of a portfolio, and that diversification is, you know, not just go and buy a bank and a miner. It needs to be sort of geographic. You need to be invested into different parts of the world, different asset classes, different sectors.
Absolutely. Thanks for the time. You're spot on, and really you need experts to be able to do that. Our view is the average South African will battle to work out geographically where they should be investing, what sectors they should be in, what currencies, stock picking. So therefore, we've partnered with the largest asset managers in the world, obviously BlackRock being well known, and Goldman Sachs to do that for us. It really just makes life a lot easier for clients and for financial advisors having experts do all of that hard work for them.
That's a great point. I mean, I you know, my JSE investments, I keep on top of it. There are a couple of hundred stocks in the JSE, and it's kind of my job to monitor them and see what's happening. Man, when I look beyond our border and I see 10,000 plus stocks, it wobbles my head, and that's the, yeah. It suddenly gets that much harder to know the what's and where's. And BlackRock, for example, largest in the world, and they are a giant, and they're coming for you, that they're bringing multi-assets. So they'll look at that diverse across your asset classes, equity, cash, bonds, and maybe a small bit of sort of what we would put into the other category, couple of percentage points there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And what they're doing is they're mixing active and passive investing, so mm-hmm. index funds together with active funds, and a mixture of their own solutions as well as third-party asset managers. So really we're getting the best of everything. We're getting kind of the top asset manager in the world, but also their research that they're doing into all the other asset managers and funds around the world to compile portfolios, which we think are really great. So I think that's important. And then just to pick up on the point you made of diversification, you know, even if one knows the local stock market really well, there's just a lot of areas of opportunity not available to South African investors. So, for yeah. example, if you wanted car manufacturers, well, you can't get that on the local market. So you're not exposed to a company like Tesla. And many other sectors, be it healthcare, be it in particular, high tech solutions, the companies like Alphabet, Google, Apple, all of those companies, you can't get that exposure without investing beyond the South African Stock Exchange. So really it's to avail oneself of additional opportunities. And then just for currency and geographical diversification as well, we know the Rand has been under huge pressure this year. And we know that over time, even though it's probably undervalued at this point, over time the Rand will continue to depreciate on an annual basis, effectively reflecting the interest rate differentials between South Africa and other countries overseas. That's the expected annual depreciation. So over a 10-year period of time, one expects the Rand to depreciate. And the story overseas at the moment is just a lot stronger than in South Africa. Even, you know, before COVID, the local market's been under massive pressure. In fact, our JSE has delivered very little, if not zero, for the 5 years mm-hmm. before COVID. So I think really just a great opportunity for clients looking to diversify, and many of them with a mindset that offshore markets will be a lot easier for them over the next couple of years in the JSE.
Yeah, and to your point, we typically have a home bias, both in our thinking, but also in our investing. The Reg 28 regulations around our pension, provident, retirement annuities and the like. Right. I'm interested, you mentioned active and passive with BlackRock. In other words, they're almost doing that sort of a core portfolio, which I imagine would be the passive, and that can give them a nice breadth. And then coming with, in essence, their alpha in those sort of satellite picks around it to generate that performance.
Correct. I mean, obviously the passive space is enormous around the rest of the world. So one is able to get exposure to all the various sectors, healthcare, energy, all those sectors have ETFs around the world. So they're able to get that exposure, which of course in the South African market is a lot more difficult. ETFs in South Africa are typically more focused around the top 40 index mm-hmm. Because there are so few counters in sort of the more specialized sectors. To actually form ETFs there. So yes, we're getting a mixture of everything from them, and really exciting.
I believe that there. That's Kenny Rapson. He's CEO, Discovery Investors. They're tied with BlackRock and Goldman Sachs Asset Management. Kenny, appreciate the time this morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app. Podcast available again on the website or from any good podcast catcher from 7 a.m. Chat to us on the social media, Facebook, Twitter, hashtag MoneyWebNow. My thanks to you for listening. My thanks to our guests, my producer Cordora and sound engineer Eddie. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.